for most of Employees' life, it was really myself, my co-founders, and you know, at Hirology, it's about a 200-person company. So everything that you know, I never had time to do, all of a sudden we had someone who that was their full-time job. They were an expert at it. We would handle customer success ourselves. You know, it was us monitoring our Zendesk account, right? At Hirology, they got a whole team. I obviously, as a founder, had to relinquish a lot of control. I wasn't making all those decisions, but people who are better than me, smarter than me, and can really focus and like turn that piece of the business into the best it can be.
Hey everyone, welcome to Honey and Hustle. I'm your host, Angela Hollowell, and in this episode, I am speaking with Ryan O'Donnell, who is one of the co-founders of Hirology, which has since been acquired. By the end of this episode, you will learn how this Guinness World Record holder sold his company and how you can do the same. Thanks so much for joining us today. This podcast is free and will always be free and available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Good Pods, Heytai, you name it. While it's free for you to consume, it's not free for us to create. We pay our video editors, writers, production assistant, and operations manager for helping us make this show come to life. If you'd like to support us in making this show, please consider subscribing to our Substack community, using our affiliate links, or just simply sharing the show with someone who might enjoy it. All right, let's get into this conversation. So Ryan, you have a very special honor today on the show. You are our first founder who has ever been acquired. And I know you can't share the number with me, but I would love to know how, one, if you knew you wanted Employees to be acquired to begin with, and what kind of the structure of that deal was.
Yeah, definitely. Well, honored to be here. Thanks for having me. Nice to be first to check that box for you. We always knew we wanted to be acquired. We raised venture capital, so at some point investors want their money back, and I've been building. I started the company in 2014. Mm-hmm. We sold it in 2021, so like mid-pandemic. So a lot of factors. I'm happy to get into the whole story, but definitely knew we wanted to sell. I wanted to sell like the right folks, and mm-hmm. obviously Hirology was a good pick for us.
Okay. So talk to me about how you structured that deal and how you knew that that was like the company you wanted to be acquired by.
Yeah. So kind of to backtrack a little bit. So COVID hits, right? March 2020, we all felt it.
Yeah.
Not a great time to have a job app. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of our customers that were like, we got to stop hiring, mm-hmm. pause things. We lost about half our revenue. And, April 2020, May 2020. And we got some interest, surprisingly, like in the months that followed, a couple of folks had reached out, interested, and I think it kind of smell what was going on, like a lot of these companies gave us like real low ball offers, not good outcomes for myself, my co-founders, my investors. But we just kept, heads down. We're like, let's keep doing this. We grew the business a lot over the kind of back half of 2020. Okay. A lot of companies that were essential workers, like hiring a lot of essential workers, they couldn't find talent any other way. Mm-hmm. And our tool kind of filled a unique niche for them. So 4x our revenue, and then wanted to, kind of like put our feelers back out there and say, hey, is there a good offer that exists or not? Ran a full process with a local group called Basis State. Okay. Contacted a lot of different companies in the space, and I've got it down to a few different potential companies that had good terms, and then it kind of came down more to like cultural fit. Mm-hmm. Where would we actually enjoy working? Yeah. And what could we actually build together? And when I met with Adam Robinson, who's the founder and CEO of Hirology, hit it off. We're like, this is a guy who I could definitely see working with, building the company with. And we both kind of had our own internal checklists. Yeah. Of what we wanted to see happen. Yeah. And that was about 2 years ago, and we checked all those boxes. So, okay. It worked out.
Okay, that's good. So to my understanding, sometimes when companies get acquired, a part of the deal is that the founders of the company that is being acquired will come work at the parent company for 3 years, 5 years, whatever the deal is, and then they will have their exit. So when we talk about, I had a seven-figure exit, typically that happens over the course of many years, right? And some of that is paid during the time that you're working with the parent company or the company that's hired you. So can you talk to me a little bit about how that works for you and your co-founders? Like, are you, how long have you been working with Hireology since then? Sounds like about 2 years. How long do you have to go? What does that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, you want to kind of make sure you do a couple things. So you want to take care of your investors. So all of our investors got paid out. And then for my co-founder and I, we wanted to, we weren't ready to quit. Like, we had a lot of, you know, fuel left in the tank. We wanted to keep going. So we structured an earnout, basically, like, try to get different milestones for a little over 2 year period of time. But, you know, things keep on going well with Hireology. And, you know, even though kind of our formal commitment is kind of wrapped up, we're still obviously kind of doubling down and kind of do more than what we originally wanted to do with the acquisition. You know, you integrate the companies, you do all like cross-selling, you bring kind of the product that we had built to employ us to all of the Hireology customers. And you start looking at like, well, what's next? You know, what more could we build? And, you know, are there interesting things we can do to not just make what we had with employ us and grow that, but like we also grow Hireology and take the whole company to another level. So that's what my co-founder and I are pretty excited about doing now.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So in terms of making decisions, right, it went from you and your co-founder to now you and this entire other company. How has decision making kind of changed? How has your relationship with your coworkers kind of changed? Like, how does that look for you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, employees is really small, myself, my co-founder, and at different times we had some other folks on the team, but for most of employees' life, it was really myself, my co-founders. And, you know, at Hireology, it's about a 200 person company. So everything that, you know, I never had time to do, all of a sudden we had someone who, that was their full-time job. They were an expert at it, you know? We would go to events occasionally, right? Hireology's got a full-time events team, you know? We're going out to all these different conferences, you know? We would handle customer success ourselves, you know? It was, you know, us monitoring our Zendesk account, right? At Hireology, they got a whole team.
Yeah.
So, you know, I obviously, as a founder, had to, you know, relinquish a lot of control. I wasn't making all those decisions. But people who are better than me, smarter than me, and, you know, can really focus and, like, turn that piece of the business into the best it can be, like, let them make the decisions, you know, let them figure out how to price it, how to market it, you know, have them working on each of those deals with a customer. You know, one person doesn't have to, you know, do it all by themselves, nor necessarily one person does it. Do they all make the right choices?
Yeah. You know?
So definitely with more scale, you got a lot more infrastructure to make better moves and kind of be able to, like, do the things that you otherwise couldn't do. You're a really small company.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, you're singing the praises of the benefits of having, you know, being acquired by a bigger company, right? But what are some of the cons that you may have experienced or some of the cons that you kind of looked out for when you were like, you know, I want to find the right fit?
Yeah. Well, you know, I can definitely speak to some of the things that we were looking out for because, you know, we wanted to be in a company that was growing. So, you know, some of the folks that we were looking at, you know, maybe their businesses, at the time, we didn't know if they were going to keep growing. And, you know, hindsight 2020, I can now look at some of them and say, like, hey, you know, that business, if we had hitched our wagon to them, they would not have been able to help us kind of achieve what we want to be. One thing that I think was kind of important for us, too, is, you know, like, we didn't want to, like, hitch our wagons to, like, an overfunded VC-hyped unicorn, you know, where, you know, they were kind of at the top of the market. In terms of valuation, raise lots of money, but might not actually live into that valuation. So that's kind of, I think, a really important thing is not just think like, what's the company you're joining, but like, is that company healthy? Is that company overvalued, undervalued? Does that company have some good runway? So Hireology checked a lot of those boxes. You know, in terms of other cons, you know, everything does take a little bit longer because you got more people, you know, than when you're doing it by yourself. You know, my co-founder and I, we would sit down, we can just hack something together and put it out to our customers, you know, that week.
Yeah.
You know, a customer says, I got a problem on a Monday, it's fixed by Tuesday, and we're talking about something else on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Things take longer when you got more folks, but, you know, when you got 10,000 customers, you want to handle that differently than when you got a few dozen.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense, actually. So something you mentioned twice now is that, you know, now that you're with Hireology, and you're not doing, you and your co-founder are not doing all the things by yourself, you know, you have the capacity to think about other things and do other things that are more specialized and, like, meaningful to you. And I kind of take that to mean, in work, but also in life, right? So for people who also don't know, you have another special honor. You are our first Guinness World Record holder here. And I want to talk about that because that has nothing to do with like hiring people. Yeah.
It's a very different thing. The record is for the largest food drive in 24 hours in a single location. We broke that record just a few miles down the road at the School of Science and Math in Durham, North Carolina. And I was a high school student. I was on top of the world. The whole school effort. We did it one year. We didn't break the record. We only raised about 300,000 pounds of food. Mm-hmm. We came back in 2011 and raised over 500,000 pounds of food. Mm-hmm. And, people will always ask me, like, well, how'd you go from, like, food drives to HR software, mm-hmm. any of the other projects I've kind of been involved with. And I say, like, all entrepreneurs, like, they just want to solve problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, we raised more food faster than anyone else, mm-hmm. anywhere else, in 18 hours. And we go to the food bank the next day, and they rent out a whole warehouse for us. It was really cool. We had a picture of us standing on top of all the food, you know. We're like, hey, maybe this will get in the book, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it actually did, but it's okay, you know, kid can dream.
Yeah.
But, the head of the operations for the food bank came over and he said, we distribute over 100,000 pounds of food every operating hour.
So this is going to last you like one day.
One day. He's like, you gave people breakfast, Ryan. Who's going to give them lunch? And, say all entrepreneurs want to solve problems. That was the first big problem. I was like, oh shit, someone's got to keep doing this. We can't just kind of hang our hat up and say, hey, we got this world record. Congratulations. Pat ourselves on the back. So, a year later, I started my first startup. It was a fundraising app. And then I just kind of got into the world of startups. And, once you get that bug, it can be hard to do anything else.
Yeah. So you've also, like you said, this is not, Employees was not your first kind of venture into startups. You've advised other startups. You've had your own startup. You've done a lot of work in fundraising here in the mm-hmm. Triangle. And in other places, talk to me about, your relationship with money, because there are definitely going to be people that are watching this, that are listening to this, and just people in life that are like, okay, you raised all this money, but what does this mean for people who need it, right?
Yeah. I think there are a lot of headlines mm-hmm. of folks who raised, honestly, obscene amounts of money
mm-hmm.
that whether it's their organization, whether it's a venture-backed company and you've got a mandate to scale,
mm-hmm.
they don't scale. They waste the money. Or they're what looks like a great nonprofit, but if you ask their clients, they might say this organization's not helping me very much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really about getting close to the people that you're actually serving. Employees, we helped over 25,000 people get jobs from when we first started the company in 2014 to when we sold it. And we raised about $1.5 million, which sounds like a lot, but in, tech startup land, that's not a whole lot of money. Even in, the local startup scene, that might seem like a lot, but if you look at, companies that are based in, New York or San Francisco, $1.5 million is like a small angel round, out there. So we were able to help a lot of people with that. And when I look at things like the food drive or with Pledge My Check, which was an initiative we did to encourage people who could donate their stimulus checks to help it out. It's like, how can we get as close to the impact as possible? We had folks who would, take their, $1,200 check and pay someone's rent with it. You get very close to the action there, right? And you kind of know that your money's going to a good cause. But on the flip side, you also know that if you can do things at a certain scale, you can help a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that, I think a lot about when you're raising money, when you're doing a project, especially if it's something that's geared towards helping folks, in the for-profit world, we think about maximizing our profit.
Mm-hmm.
In the nonprofit world, we don't necessarily think about maximizing our impact. So I think a lot of folks might be thinking too small about what they're doing. If you have the potential to help and impact thousands of people, but you only raise enough money to help 100.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just doing yourself a disservice. You're doing a disservice to the thousands of people you could be helping.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for a lot of the projects I'm involved with, when I'm talking to founders, if you've got a for-profit company, you're doing tech startup land, mm-hmm. or you've got a a family resource center. It's the same lesson. You want to make sure you've got all the resources you need to be able to meet the needs, whatever that is. That might be a, you know, we want to be the best program in our county. That might be, we want to have a model that works nationally, but, you know, upset that and then like go chase after it.
Right.
And go figure that out.
No, and I think you make a really important distinction here that we also try to subtly make on the show, which is that being a nonprofit founder doesn't excuse you from like the goal setting and some of the mission building and impact building of a for-profit founder, right? You still have, you know, an obligation to raise money, one, to pay yourself at the very least, but also to like buy the things that you need, pay the people that you need, you know, garner, organize the things that you need in your community to make the impact that you want and that you're set out to make. And I think like your message is just dream big. Like that is like a huge, huge thing because nonprofit founders, you know, a lot of times they're starting and they're just like, you know, this is a need that I saw and I just want to help these people, right? But, you know, they could be possibly doing a little bit more. They could be meeting the needs in more than one way, right? And, you know, really expanding their vision beyond that initial kind of thought. And I think it's not that they don't want to. It's not that they don't recognize that there is opportunity there. I think that, you know, their perception of fundraising just may be a little bit different.
Yeah, like I'll tell you a story. So we've ever since we broke the record, I get a call about once a year from someone who wants to break it. And, you know, sometimes it's a school, sometimes it's a church, sometimes it's someone trying to do their Boy Scout Eagle project, you know? And I always tell them the same thing. It's like, you got to set like the most ambitious goal possible.
Yeah.
You will not get there thinking small. And a lot of folks, you know, like the best ones that we saw, I think they didn't even cross 100,000 pounds of food. So for me, I'm like, you know, that's where I kind of start the call, you know. But, you know, you've got to really think about it at that level of scale. You've got to think, you know, who do I partner with? You know, do I partner with, you know, a couple small local community organizations or do I try to get a national sponsor, right? Am I raising food for my local food pantry or is it with, you know, potentially two or three large food banks? You know, we covered 34 counties in North Carolina. So it was just a whole nother level. We brought in Walmart. We brought in all three of the big universities, all of the other universities in town. We brought in tons of different high schools, senior centers. I mean, we got so many folks at the table that, you know, we knew, you know, before the food drive even started, that we were going to beat last year's record. So we were like, look, that we know exactly what we can do. We just have to, like, you know, put in the work, you know, and run the numbers and see, like, hey, if we only raise $100,000 for this project, will it be successful? And, you know, you never want to be in a spot where you you miscalculate that and you got to come ask for more money. That doesn't go over nearly as well. But you want to be able to say, hey, for us to really achieve our goals, this is what it's going to take.
Yeah. And just for reference, for people who are not familiar with North Carolina, North Carolina has 100 counties. So for 34 counties to be covered, that is literally a third of North Carolina, which is not a small feat for a state of, what, 10, 12 million, something like that. So pretty insane. I want to pivot back to the tech world just for a little bit here, since we're kind of talking about startups and goal setting here. First of all, when I moved here, I didn't know how big the tech scene was. I didn't know anything about Research Triangle Park, didn't know anything about that. And then I started seeing headlines for Research Triangle Park being in Silicon Valley of the East. Talk to me about your perspective of the tech landscape here in the Raleigh-Durham area.
Yeah, I always take some issue when folks try to say that we'll be like the next Silicon Valley. I think we'll be the first Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill triangle. You know, we've got our own identity crisis. I think we come through as a region. If you look at, you know, some of these, you know, like national polls, they'll split Raleigh and Durham. And, you know, if you do that, it'd be like, well, what if we split San Francisco, you know, just in half, just arbitrary, you know, like we've got, I think some unique, setups there just like how our local municipalities are. But I feel like at least when I came to the region, I came here for high school, and stayed to go to NC State, you know, most folks in this area consider it, you know, one startup community. And, you know, I've got friends in Chapel Hill working on startups, friends in Durham. I live in Apex now. I started in Raleigh. So I think it's really about looking at what's unique about our region. And in our region, I think we got a lot of folks who are bootstrapping and building some phenomenal companies without raising a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things, it's kind of a necessity. We don't have as much capital as some other markets. So we get real scrappy.
Yeah.
That's one thing we do. Also, like the folks here, like incredibly nice. Like I don't think I've ever run into a, you know, a founder or an investor or someone in the startup community that was like super arrogant, you know, or wasn't willing to lend a hand. If I needed help with something, you know, I'd obviously help them. And, you know, I think it's just a unique part about our community that I haven't been to all the other startup hubs in the country, but it seems when people talk about what it's like to be here when they've been maybe in, you know, New York, Boston, or out west, they seem to highlight, like, you know, what is this like to work with some of the folks here. And, you know, folks are kind, folks get the job done,
yeah.
And, you know, it's a good place to, like, raise a family, you know, and all these kinds of things, which is probably some of the unique, like, special sauce of what we have that maybe some other regions don't.
Yeah, some of that Southern hospitality, some
just
of that Southern grit.
Yeah, a little bit of that, a little bit of barbecue, and, you know, it's all good. Yeah.
We're not going to get started on my opinions on leftover barbecue.
Hey, I won't go there.
Okay. So as we talk about, you know, really a lot of things that you just mentioned have somewhat nothing to do with work, you know what I mean? They have everything to do with people. So talk to me about your philosophy for building a good people culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, within your startup and now within Hireology.
Yeah, I mean, I think when folks join a startup, they're usually looking for a couple of things, right? Maybe they don't ever see themselves working at a big company,
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe they want to have some of that autonomy. Maybe they want to grow a lot, you know, like I started Employus when I was a senior in college.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when I was a senior in college, I didn't know how to sell. I didn't know how to market. I didn't know how to recruit people. And when you're in a startup, you got to learn all those things. Mm-hmm. Like there's not a training program.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of being like incredibly real with folks and just saying, like, this is the job. This is what we got to do. It's going to be very hard. You're probably going to work harder than you would in another role at another company. But you know, you've got an opportunity to learn. And you know, I'm definitely someone who, with a lot of the folks that I like to work with, I like folks who are really curious, who want to like keep bettering themselves, who love to learn, and want to be around other people who also want to put in like their best effort, right? Because you know, I think a lot of folks, you know, if you're in a startup, you know, you got your back against the wall. It's not easy.
Yeah.
You're going to spend a ton of time together.
Mm-hmm.
And not that you should, you know, build companies with your friends, but you want to build good relationships at work.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the best friends I have now are folks who, you know, we worked together maybe on a project once, or we had, you know, overlapped at a startup. You know, when you're in the trenches like that, you can just do some really cool things.
Yeah.
And I think it's just important for folks to, like dig in,
yeah.
And start building with folks that, you know, are all kind of interested in a similar, you know, passion project or topic, you know, like with Pledge My Check,
mm-hmm.
there's a bunch of people, we were all at home, couldn't go anywhere. We all had some skills,
yeah.
And we were like, hey, well, what if we start this little fundraising site, you know? And it was something where we could all contribute in a different way. We got some designers designing stuff. We got some folks reaching out to, you know, news outlets,
yeah.
Got some nonprofit folks who are reaching out to different organizations. So you can really create some special sauce with that.
I don't know. You keep using sauce. It makes me think you're hungry.
I know.
Right?
I saw you what you had for lunch. I was like a little jealous.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. It's BU Cafe. They were amazing. Always amazing. So my last question before I let you get out of here. When we think about the term tech for good, right? I think that means something kind of universal, you know, and that's kind of a phrase that's been used in other industries, design for good, you know, film for good, all these types of things. And one thing that I am noticing, and a lot of people are noticing, which is why they're super interested in the tech industry, is that the salaries and the pay have been keeping pace with inflation
mm-hmm.
in a way that other industries have kind of been lagging behind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that's sustainable? Like, do you feel like the tech startup space is somewhere that is going to continue to grow and be able to sustain the pace of the salaries as it continues to move forward and everything that's coming, AI, 3D printing, like all these new areas, app development, which is, of course has been around, but has become even more robust as we think about different types of web applications. You know, for people who may be listening now, they're like, well, I want to create something in the tech space. You know, I want to have that freedom to have autonomy over my life as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has never been a better time to start something. You know, if you look at how easy it is to start building something like no-code tools, like there's a great tool called Glide that I encourage folks to check out. If you want to build a tech product, you know, super easy to just get started with it. And you don't have to go raise $5 million and buy servers and recruit engineers and get an office space and find a data center. You don't have to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
You can, you know, literally, you can like incorporate with Stripe. You can create a business, get a bank account, you know, get set up to raise money. You can prototype tools. You can figure out how to sell something pretty easily. So I think, you know, there's probably never been a better time to start something. I've seen a lot of stats that show, like, whenever there's a downturn in the economy, that's when some of the best startups get formed. When the markets are frothy, sometimes you get some bad startups that get formed. And, you know, if you look at some of the companies that have done, like, large layoffs in the tech space, it's because they overhired. Maybe they were, I mean, had some inflated valuations there. You know, I don't know, you know, in terms of like salary growth, if that'll always go up and to the right. But you look at, you know, some sectors that need tech talent who traditionally don't pay, you know, what you might expect from like a big tech company in terms of salary. So I think there's some like normalizing there. You know, for a lot of folks who have, you know, been in tech or are trying to break into it, unlike the rest of the economy, you know, it's still very much, I feel like, in a recession from, you know, not a lot of companies hiring at the same levels that they were. So they're getting a little bit more choosy of who they hire. They're not offering as big of, you know, salaries as they used to. People are getting a little bit more realistic about their equity packages, which is important. But I think overall it's a great place where you can jump in, learn a lot, develop some skills, and then, you know, you find out if it's something that you want to stay working in a tech company, or maybe you take those skills and you work in a non-tech company, but involved in like product development or the technology side of those businesses. So it's definitely like a great skill set if anyone's, you know, trying to figure out what to do next. You know, it's definitely a good area to learn.
Well, before we let you get out of here, I have some rapid fire questions for you.
Let's go.
You game? All right. He said, he's ready. All right. One of them you actually already answered, which was, what tool do you find yourself constantly recommending? It sounds like Glide is one of those tools.
Glide is awesome.
Glide, okay. Sounds
10
good.
10 out of 10.
No notes. All right. So, the second one is, what would be the name of your autobiography?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I am very Irish, Ryan Patrick O'Donnell. So it would probably be something about luck. I've felt like tremendously lucky at each stage that I was building employers with other things, just like happenstance encounters. So something about luck. Maybe that'll be the title.
I like that. Now that you're at Hireology, how would you describe that brand in three words?
Hireology's brand in three words. I'm going to steal our slogan from this year.
Okay.
So, Adam, sorry. It's just make it happen. Simple. You know, that's what everyone at Hireology is all about. Is, you know, we get in there, we're here to help our customers. We're here to make it happen.
Okay. Steal like an artist, real time. And then the last one, if you didn't have to work to make money, how would you spend your time?
I just love helping folks. So, you know, but whatever it could be, if I didn't have to... If I didn't, you know, need a job, I would just find ways to help folks. You know, like I used to be a foster parent and getting really involved with helping folks who are involved in that system and helping support families so that they can keep their kids and raise their kids in their homes. So those are some of the orgs and causes I'm really like passionate about, where I would just dive in, you know, with both feet on those things.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate that. I appreciate you coming in today and sharing your experience with being acquired and starting a tech startup and, you know, just being enjoying the Triangle area.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
That's all for today's episode. And if you can't wait for the next episode, you can subscribe to our paid membership on Substack to get exclusive content like outtakes, bloopers, after show thoughts, and more. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on your app of choice or like this video on YouTube. We'll catch you in the next episode.